welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, delivering an hour of science fiction. Later on, we'll hear the story of I Should Die Before I Wake on Quiet Please. But right now, one of Ray Bradbury's most well-known and most adapted on radio stories, Zero Hour. The first would be on the NBC sci-fi show Dimension X in June of 1950, and heard again twice on Suspense in 55 and 58 and X-1 in 1956. So this would mark the second broadcast of Bradbury's story from October 4th, 1953 on CBS.
Tired of the everyday grind? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all? We offer you Escape.
Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
In your house, surrounded by all that is secure and normal, while outside, your children are playing a new and wonderful game.
Well, thanks. Thanks a lot. Hello?
Hello, Mary. How are things in New York?
Oh, Helen, how nice. Are you in town?
No, I'm in Danbury. I was just thinking of you, thought I'd call.
It's long distance, though. You shouldn't.
Oh, I can afford 3 minutes. How's Henry?
Oh, fine. And Bill?
Oh, just fine. Well, what about me?
Oh, wonderful. Noisier than ever. She's got a new game now. It's taken the place of hopscotch. Invasion.
Is she playing that, too?
Well, yes. Are yours?
Same thing. Some kind of geometric jacks, I suppose. Is it a scream? All the kids their age are playing it up here. Jimmy's got a crush on some guy named Drill. I think that's what it is.
Well, it must be a new password. Mine likes him, too.
I didn't know it got to New York. Word of mouth, I suppose. You know, kids. Funniest thing, I got a letter from my sister in Boston. She says her kids are playing it, too. It's sweeping the country.
I wonder where they learned it.
Don't ask me. All I know is what Timmy told me at lunch. 0 hours at 5 o'clock.
When?
Today. That's when the invasion's going to be. These kids and their imaginations.
And they talked a little more. Schoolgirl friends. Casual woman talk. But Mrs. Morris was thoughtful. She was thinking of other things. Of adults. Of children under 9 with imagination, rose bushes, dimensions. She thought of how much she had forgotten about being a child, and she wondered about Mink and all the kids who at that moment were playing Invasion.
Oh, no, not if I know Fred. I'm so glad you called.
Give my love to Henry and a kiss for Mink.
I will, and to Bill and the kids.
Thanks, dear. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
An hour drowsed by. It was 3 o'clock. There was an occasional hum inside the coolness of the house as a car passed outside. The street was lined with good, green, and peaceful trees. And all across the city, in other gardens and other places, children under 9 were excitedly playing a game, talking to rose bushes and grass lawns, trees and shrubs. Even children in apartment houses, high in the air, conferring with potted plants, cactus, and ivy. Mrs. Morris finished vacuuming and went to the kitchen.
Oh, hello, dear.
Hi, Mom. Can I have a glass of water?
Oh, of course. I'll get it.
R² 47, A over 56 to the 7th degree, XT7.
Hmm? What, dear?
Oh, nothing, Mom.
Oh, here you are.
Thanks.
How are things going?
Hmm?
The invasion.
Oh, that.
Yes, that.
Almost finished. When everything's right, Drill said we should be ready on time.
5 o'clock.
That's right. How did you know?
Well, Helen called me from Danbury. She says Timmy's playing it, too.
Hey, that's keen.
I guess all the kids are, aren't they?
No, not all of them. That guy's like Pete Britz and Dale Jarrett. They're growing up. They make fun of us. They're even worse than parents. They just won't believe in drill. They're so smart just because they're growing up. You'd think they know better. They were little only a couple of years ago. Well, we're going to get rid of them first. Drill says it's okay to kill them first.
Now, wait a minute. I don't like that kind of talk, Mink. Do you hear me? I don't like it at all.
Oh, Mom.
I mean it. You keep on that way and there's no more playing. You'll have to tell Anna to go home and you'll stay inside until bedtime.
I'm sorry.
Well, I should think so.
Thanks for the wire, Mom.
Mink?
Uh-huh.
What did those numbers mean?
What numbers?
Those numbers you were saying to yourself before.
Oh, that? Well, they're just things that we have to do to get Drill and his friends out. That's all.
Look, dear, why don't you and Anna go down to the drugstore and get some ice cream, huh? You don't have to use your allowance. I'll pay for it.
Haven't got time, Mom.
Well, I'd never believe I'd hear you say that.
I gotta go now, Mom.
Oh, wait a minute. Mink, I want you to tell me the truth. What is it? Invasion, silliness.
It isn't silly. Well, it's just a game. That's all. We're just playing at invasion. Excuse me, I gotta get back now. I'll see you later.
We will return to Escape in just a moment, but first, this is Fire Prevention Week, proclaimed by the President and supported by all responsible businesses and individuals. And now, back to Escape. It was a game called Invasion. Mrs. Morris's little girl, Mink, was playing it. So was Mink's friend, Anna, and all the other children under nine. It was called Invasion, and 0 hour was to be at 5 o'clock. Mrs. Morris was disturbed. She wasn't sure why, but there was something about parents shutting ears and eyes to what was happening. And because she was disturbed, she did something she didn't usually do. She called her husband at the office.
Hello, dear.
Oh, hello, Henry. I'm sorry to bother you, but Miss Maxson said you weren't busy.
Not too. I should be able to get home early today. Everything all right?
Yes.
You all right?
I'm fine.
Mink?
Well, she's... Henry.
What, dear?
Oh, nothing. I just wanted to talk to you for a minute, that's all.
Listen, you sure you're all right?
Oh, yes.
Mink been getting on your nerves?
Not really.
Well, now, you tell her to behave. When I come home, she and I are going to have a talk. Matter of fact, she's been a little fresh lately. I don't think it's good for her to...
Well, she's playing outside. She's fine.
Honey, is something wrong?
Well, no, I told you. I was thinking about you and wanted to talk. That's all. Nothing wrong with that.
Not a thing.
Well, you go back to your work, dear. I'll see you soon.
All right.
What time do you think you'll be home?
About 5. Maybe a little earlier.
5? Oh.
Hey. What? Come on. What?
Well, I was just thinking. Nothing, really. Just Mink and you and me.
Good thoughts.
Goodbye, dear.
So long. You are okay, aren't you?
Oh, I'm fine. Goodbye.
Bye.
Another hour passed, and it was 4:30. The day began to wane. The sun lowered in the peaceful blue sky. Shadows lengthened on the green lawn. Outside, it was quiet. The two little girls more intent than ever upon their endless movement of design and pattern with the implements before them. Mrs. Morris watched from the window, and she had never known Mink to have such powers of concentration. She had switched on the radio and sat drinking a cup of coffee and turned over her thoughts.
Children, children. Children, love and hate side by side. Sometimes children love you, hate you all in half a second. Strange children. Do they ever forget or forgive the whippings and the harsh, strict words of commands? I wonder. How can you forget or forgive those over and above you? Those tall, silly dictators. Those parents.
Mom!
Oh, what is it, dear?
Have we got a piece of lead pipe and a hammer?
Well, I don't know. They might be in the garage. What do you want them for?
Oh, we just need them.
Well, if you tell me, I can find
them. I can get them. Thanks, Mom.
Is something wrong?
Drill's done halfway. If we could get them all the way through, it'd be easier. And all the others could come through after them.
Well, can I help?
Thanks, Mom. I can fix it.
You better get through, Mink. I want you to take your bath before your father comes home.
All right.
He's coming home early. And Mink! Mink!
Mink had disappeared behind the shrubs, and Mrs. Morris knew it was ridiculous to make an issue of it. Besides, what was the issue? Invasion? Drill? 0 hour? Unaccountably, a cool breeze came up, and although normally, for that time of year, it would have been a relief, Mrs. Morris felt a chill. She closed the window. Time passed. A curious, waiting silence came upon the street, deepening. Then from the living room, Mrs. Morris heard... O'clock. 0 hour. 0 hour. It had come, an hour had gone. But was the clock right? Mrs. Morris, knowing how foolish it was, knowing it, went to the phone and dialed.
Silly. Silly.
When you hear the tone, the time will be exactly 4:54 and 20 seconds.
4:54 and 20 seconds. And Mrs. Morris knew that it wasn't as silly as she had thought, because it wasn't 5 o'clock yet. Not 0 hour yet. Then the car drove up into the driveway.
Hi, Mink. How's it going? Hi, Anna.
Hi, Daddy.
Hi, Mark.
You got a kiss for your old man?
I haven't got time now, Daddy.
Well, that's so nice, Mink. What are you doing?
We're playing Invasion.
Oh, swell. Mother and Anna?
Yes.
Okay. Be good.
I will. 0 hour in a few minutes, Daddy.
All right. I'll be ready.
Mrs. Morris heard him chuckle. Then his steps up the walk to the front door.
Mary!
Oh, I'm in the living room, dear.
Oh. Hi. Daughter didn't have time for a kiss. How about you?
Hard day?
Oh, not particularly.
Would you like a cocktail?
You read my mind.
Martini?
Perfect. Anything exciting happened today?
No. Oh, Helen called.
Oh?
From Danbury. I told her she was crazy, but she just felt like calling.
Like you calling me this afternoon. Crazy, huh? What was that all about?
Well, I told you I wanted to.
Hey, incidentally, what's this new game the kids are playing? 0 hour. Invasion. That's a nice, depressing thought.
Oh, I don't know. Something silly. They're all playing it these days. Here.
Thanks. You make the best martinis in the world.
I'm glad you think so.
And there's been a beautiful day. You know, I kept looking out the window wishing I was anywhere but in that office.
What's the time, Henry?
A couple of minutes after five. What?
No, the clock's wrong. By your watch.
Hmm? I've got 2 minutes, too. I'm probably slow. You got something on the stove?
No, I just wondered.
Honey. Hey. Look at me. What's the matter?
Well, nothing, really.
No.
No, really.
Mink been up to something?
Of course not.
Then what?
Well, I guess I'm a little tired. Upset, that's all.
You want to go out for dinner?
Oh, no. I got a steak here.
Well, I tell you what. I'll barbecue it. How'd that be?
Oh, fine. What was that?
What?
I thought I heard something.
Well, I didn't.
I must have been imagining it.
Hey, you are jumpy. Why don't you have a drink? Do you good?
No, I don't want one. What's the time?
Mary, what is this? Well, I mean it. Something's wrong. Now I want to know.
It's silly. It's so silly. I'm on edge. That's
Mary?
I am.
I don't like it. That kid's done something, hasn't she? I'm going to get her in.
Oh, no, Henry, please, don't. She hasn't. It's nothing at all. I just...
What's that?
I don't know.
Well, those kids haven't got anything dangerous out there, have they? I notice a lot of junk lying around.
No. Nothing dangerous. Just things, you know.
Nothing electrical?
Well, no, I'm sure not.
What the devil?
Maybe you better go out and tell them to stop playing now. It's after five. You tell me to put off the invasion until tomorrow.
It's coming from outside. So what are they up to? I'd better take a look. Make! Good Lord! Bombs! They're bombing!
Oh, no! It's upstairs. I know it is. In the attic. That's where it is.
Mary!
After her, confused, frightened. She seemed to know something.
In the attic. That's where it is.
Her mind had worked that quickly. Any excuse to get him away from the outside, to get him upstairs to the attic in time. But outside, there were more explosions, and they could hear the children screaming with delight.
It's not in the attic. It's outside. Mink's out there. What's the matter with
you? No. I'll show you. Hurry. Get inside, quick. Now, we're safe until tonight.
Mary.
Maybe we can sneak out later. Maybe we can escape.
Are you crazy? Why'd you throw the key away? For heaven's sake, the kid's out there. Do you want to...
Oh, you don't know. You don't. We've got to stay here. We've got to. It's horrible. We've got to. You've got to stay here with me.
Well, at this point, I don't know how the devil I can get out. Where's that light cord?
Be quiet, please.
But...
Be quiet. They'll hear us. They'll find us. Oh, Henry, please.
Who's going to answer them? There's that noise again. It's in this house. Mary, what is it? Mary, what's happening? You know. Now answer me. Stop that, Mary. Somebody's downstairs. Who's down there?
No, hush. Please be quiet. They might go away. Please.
And between his wife's terror and the electric humming from below, Mr. Morris felt a great fear. They trembled together in silence in the attic, Mr. and Mrs. Morris, parents of the little girl. Then they heard steps coming up the stairs and a voice.
Mom! Dad! Where are you?
And a queer, cold light became visible under the door crack. A strange odor. And the alien sound of eagerness in Mink's voice was almost more than they could bear. Each wanted to scream.
Mom! Dad!
And another sound. And the attic door lock melted. Mink. Mink, with bright little eyes and tousled hair, peered inside. And behind her, tall, wavering blue shadows. Frightful shadows.
Bradbury. Direction and adaptation of the story were by Anthony Ellis. Tonight, you heard Paula Winslow as Mrs. Morris and Issa Ashdown as Mink, with John Daner as the narrator. Featured in the cast were Eve McVeigh, Bill Johnstone, and Mary McGovern. The special music for Escape was composed and conducted by Leith Stevens. Next week...
You are together in a room... You and the one you love, the objects of an experiment, while the man who has dared you to undergo his test is waiting for the moment when you break and in your defeat find that there is no escape.
So listen next week when Escape will bring you Stephen Vincent Benet's unusual story, Elementals.
Escape, on 2 and 2 yesterday from October 4th, 1953 on CBS. You're listening to an hour of sci-fi on 2 and 2 yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now Willis Cooper, who wrote for the anthology series Quiet Please, brings us another strange story with a sci-fi twist called If I Should Wake Before I Die. Ernest Chappell, the star in this February 27th, 1949 broadcast from ABC.
Quiet Please. Broadcasting Company presents Quiet Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet Please for today is called If I Should Wake Before I Die. I am a practical man. I want you to understand that I am practical, utterly practical. That I believe nothing that cannot be proved beyond the shadow of a doubt. I know that men live because the lives of many of them impinge on me, who also live. I believe that they die because I've seen them die. Beyond that, there is nothing of life or death that can be proved to my satisfaction. And speculation does not interest me. Whether men die or do not die is of small concern to me. My abiding interest is knowledge, pure knowledge. I've devoted most of my 47 years to its pursuit. The application of the knowledge I gain is a small moment to me. I may say that it's of no moment whatever. The experiment, the deduction and proof of new natural laws is the be-all and the end-all, as I believe the poets put it. And their application is not my province. Don here does not share my opinion. Don's interest is in the applications of the laws that I and others have discovered and proved.
You don't care, Dr. Anderson, whether a million men and women die as the result of the application of your discoveries?
It is a matter of no interest whatever to me, Don.
I wonder if you really mean that.
I mean it. Implicitly.
Do you know what the world is doing with your discoveries?
Obviously, I know something of what they're doing. Well, I assure you, it does not interest me.
It doesn't interest you that three men are circling this Earth in a satellite rocket as a result of your research?
I am interested only in the data they may bring back from outer space. Data on which I may base further research.
It doesn't interest you that those data may become the basis for the building of fortresses out there in space? from which the Earth can be bombarded by some of the new weapons that have derived from your studies?
I didn't invent the weapons, Don.
Other men did, using your technical data.
Yeah, that's their concern.
Well, does it interest you that those three men may never come back to Earth? That they may be facing a horrible death out there, 700 miles away from this Earth, alone out there in the dark?
I have no time to contemplate their troubles, Don.
You sent them there?
I did not.
They wouldn't be there if it hadn't been for your formulas and your work.
I tell you again, that is their concern, not mine.
Do you know who they are?
Don, I'm very busy. Will you please go back to your office and let me finish my work?
Ernst Macy and Dan Seymour.
Please go away.
And your brother.
My brother.
Your kid brother, Edward.
Will you hand me that slide rule, please?
Will you listen to me?
The other one, please.
Dr. Anderson, I tell you that... I'll answer. Yes. Well, this is Don, Major. When? You sure? Yes, he's here. No, I don't think so. I'll tell him. Yeah. Thank you. Dr. Anderson.
Well?
That was Major Hilton over at the center. They had another message from the satellite rocket at 1455. From your brother, Edward.
What did you say?
From 700 miles out in space. From a rocket that's been circling the Earth for 3 months now, alone out there in the cold void, with such a little hope of ever coming back to warmth and light and friends. From the dark and the cold...
What are you talking about?
Your brother, Edward.
He's dead.
Somewhere out there in space, he's dead, do you hear me? Sent you a message. He died before he finished it. Tell my brother, he said. Tell my brother if I should wake before I die. And he died before he finished it. Do you know what that means? Do you hear me? Your brother!
Just hand me that notebook there, will you? No, the one with the brown cover. Thanks. Knowledge is all. The application of the knowledge is unimportant, unless it leads to further knowledge. I have no theories of life or death or of creation. Explanation or the attempted explanation is futile and unnecessary. There are no secrets of life or death. They're chemical processes peculiar to man. They exist, and that's all. Perhaps someday I or one of my colleagues will discover the principles of this living and dying. But there's a long, long apprenticeship ahead of us before we can turn to that phase of science. And in the meantime, there are problems to be solved, answers to be proved. And it's of no importance what temporary use is made of the results of our researches. The space rocket would have been useful, no doubt, in charting the effects of cosmic radiation. But it's gone. We must dismiss it as an expedient that failed. Knowledge. Knowledge is the goal. All else is unimportant. Never forget that. It's worth any price.
Doesn't it depend just a little, Dr. Anderson, on who pays the price?
What?
The ones who die in the search?
Why, as long as the important ones don't die, the price is reasonable.
Who is to decide which are the unimportant ones?
I am important.
Yes, to yourself.
To the world.
The others are important to the world, too.
Nonsense.
There wouldn't be any world without them, Doctor.
Well, in that sense,
people like your brother.
He was dispensable to science.
To you, personally?
Are you implying that I didn't love my brother?
Am I?
I did.
I wonder.
Now, please don't try to involve me in an emotional experience, Don. I have work to do.
It might do you some good, Dr. Anderson, if you did get involved in an emotional experience. It might wake you up.
I'm awake, thank you.
No, you're not.
time to explain what you mean by that?
No. I don't think I will, Doctor. I don't think I will.
Well, I don't know what you mean.
You know what you're doing.
I do.
You know that the application of your research and experiment is producing the most frightful weapons the world has ever seen.
That's not my fault. That's application again.
Well, they wouldn't exist without what you know, what you've proved.
In that case, I am only helping my country.
That's what the others say.
What others?
The other scientists in other countries. They're helping their countries, too.
Well, that's their privilege.
You realize that you and the others are distilling destruction for the whole world, don't you?
That's the fault of you young military men who are converting pure research into weapons for war.
I grant that. But you are the ones that gave us that research. It's your dreams, not ours.
I wish you'd stop talking of dreams.
Well, I wish...
You wish what?
I remember what your brother sent to you from way out there in space. Dying in a rocket ship. A spaceship that grew out of your dreams.
Yeah, I've forgotten it.
Why, Dr. Anderson, you must remember it.
No.
It's like that little prayer that kids say at bedtime. Only your brother changed it around a little. He knew what he was talking about. You remember it?
Something sentimental. I remember I used to say it when we were children at night. I know it. Now I lay me down to sleep. If I should die before I wake...
That isn't what your brother said. Dying out there in the cold and the dark.
I don't...
I'd try to remember it if I were you, Doctor. Your brother said, if I should wake before I die...
It doesn't make sense.
Oh, yes, it does, Doctor. He was telling you to wake up before you die. Wake up, Doctor, before you die and the world dies with you.
There is nothing I can do. I have committed myself to this and I've gone too far. The others, Barshoff and Beveridge and Delaplaine, they have gone too far, too. We cannot stop. It's no dream, no dream at all. It is pure science. What if they have perverted our dreams? Not dreams. What if they have perverted our studies, our equations, our living thoughts to weapons of destruction? It was not our fault. I was not my brother's keeper.
But he died far, far out there in the illimitable reaches of immeasurable cold. Out where the cosmic dust lies in great cold clouds. There is no time.
The alchemists tried for thousands of years to transmute base metals into precious ones. I only carried out their fumbling task.
But you succeeded, you and the others.
I didn't pollute the waters of Bikini.
No. You sat in a snug office 8,000 miles away. And the reports of the awful upheaval of the sea came to you. And you read them and smiled. You leaned back in your chair and smiled. They've proved what we knew could be proved, you said. And you smiled.
It was not my fault.
You dreamed and destruction leaked from the floor of the sea and the waters were charged with death and you smiled in your dream.
It was no dream.
And your brother and two other men shook hands with you and stepped into the rocket shell that was to be their tomb. And that tomb was the reality of your dream.
No.
And you dream now of more wonders upon the earth, upon this earth that one day you will destroy, you with your own hands.
No, I say...
Your dream grows brighter and greater until the whole universe is blotted out. And you stretch out your hands for reality, and there's only black.
Attention, please. Attention, please. In 30 seconds, Project Phaeton will be activated. In 30 seconds, Project Phaeton will be activated. 30 seconds.
Wait.
I tell you that...
No, no, not now. Come over here to the window.
No,
I... You must.
28
Bring
seconds.
Your... No, no, take those binoculars from the desk.
Seconds.
Quick, come on.
Is this the end, then?
This is Project Phaeton.
What is
seconds.
It?
Over here, where you can see the moon.
Seconds.
Hurry.
23 seconds.
What is
22
it?
22 seconds.
We're going to reach the moon.
Seconds.
What?
20
here.
Seconds.
Watch the radar.
19 seconds.
No, the binoculars won't do you any good.
18 seconds.
Here.
17
Watch.
Seconds.
This is the project I heard about them.
Where did you hear about
seconds.
It?
There's been talk.
Yeah, I'll
seconds.
Have somebody's head for that.
13
Watch.
Seconds.
Watch.
Is
seconds.
It just another radar contact?
We're
seconds.
Going to reach it. We kept it a secret for so long. Only 10 seconds.
9
what
seconds.
Are you going to do?
The beam is on
it.
What are you
seconds.
Going to do?
Going to reach the moon
7
with a projectile. Atomic fission projectile.
6 seconds.
Watch.
5 seconds.
Watch.
Oh, Dr. Anderson.
Seconds.
No.
3 seconds. 2 seconds.
If we do this...
1 second. Time.
Hide it here? Wait. For the sound to reach us. Now watch. Watch.
240,000 miles.
Watch. Watch the radar.
What will happen?
An explosion we can see with the radar, I hope. That's nearly there now. A second or two.
Dream goes on.
Look. Don, look.
I pray the Lord. My soul to take.
One does not always accurately foresee the results of a projected experiment. Yeah, that, however, is the purpose of experiments, to prove or disprove a theory, a scientific conception. If it were possible to conduct all one's experiments personally, the margin of error would naturally be reduced to the minimum. But when a large number of other individuals enter into the operation, error and the possibility of error is naturally multiplied. Now, that's an interesting thought. I must make a note of it. In what ratio does probable error increase with the addition of new minds to a particular project? I must deduce a formula. At the moment, I do not know exactly what went wrong. It's within the realm of possibility that I might have made a slight miscalculation myself. Although, naturally, I doubt that. It's possible that fissionable material reacts with greater celerity where atmosphere, as we know it, is lacking. It is possible that there were on the moon certain elements unknown to us, elements that do not show up in spectrometric analyses, elements particularly amenable to chain reaction of unprecedented violence. It's mildly shocking to realize the extent of the damage done by Project Phaeton. However, I'm reminded of the theory of the philosopher Berkeley that one must doubt everything outside the circle of one's own consciousness. Certainly, I have the evidence of my own consciousness. The image of the moon instantaneously disappeared on the radar screen at the precise second when my calculations showed that the projectile had reached the moon's surface. And although this is the time of the full moon, for 3 nights now in succession, it has not appeared in its customary place in the firmament. Therefore, I am led to an ineluctable conclusion, which is corroborated by other hearsay evidence. It is a fact, and I state it positively, that the moon has been utterly destroyed as a result of Project Phaeton.
Never again the sweet moonlight for the lovers. Never more the harvest moon rising above the hills on an October night.
But science is vindicated. Science has done it. Pure science went into the calculations, the great thinking machines ground and chattered, and the data poured out. The data that I alone knew would come. Equations no human mind could imagine. Beautiful, pure mathematical fuss far beyond the conception.
Far beyond the conception of the ones who die.
Calculations of mass and energy and the cosmic movements of all the planets. Allowances for the gravitation of stars 40 light years away. Corrections for the rotation of the Earth. The absolute cold of 240,000 miles of space, pinpointed on the great crater of Copernicus.
That man has gazed on and pondered since the world began, and that no man shall ever see again.
The hand of man has reached out into space and found a target. Pure, pure thought that sought out the farthest reaches of a mind and devised the weapon.
And in every harbor of the world, the tides rushed out, and the very floor of the sea was plain to human eyes for one last look. And far out on the breast of the ocean, great tidal waves that overtook and destroyed everything that floated.
Man has at last conquered space.
And thousands dead for miles inland from the shore when the waters returned. And the moon...
I did not know we would destroy the moon, I tell you. I thought there would be a small explosion that we could see.
And man has destroyed what God hath wrought. You've dreamed well, my doctor, my scientist, my brother.
It was an experiment.
And well done. Well completed.
Tied for the price of progress.
So they are. So they are.
There will be no more wars, Don. Don't you understand that? We have proved that modern war is so destructive that no nation can afford to fight them. That's no dream.
Yes, yes, you have proved that. You have destroyed one world. A very pretty demonstration.
It was no world. It was the moon, the dead moon.
Dead, yes. Gone, yes. But perhaps it was a world, Dr. Anderson.
Nonsense.
Vegetation on the moon, you knew that. Radar proved it long ago, way back in 1948.
Well...
Why could there not have been people?
It couldn't be proved.
It will never be proved now. There's only dust. And our own world. Can you think of what has happened on our own world and look any man in the eye?
I didn't intend that.
But you accomplished it.
I know it, but...
You have other experiments in mind, I assume?
Well, not immediately, of course.
Of course.
Yeah, not for years.
Of course not.
We have to go on.
Do you? You know the end of it all.
We can't stop now. We started this thing and there's no turning back.
The point of no return.
Exactly. We have accomplished a thing that human minds could never imagine.
You have dreamed, and you go on dreaming of destruction.
No, no. We'll take care next time.
You will.
Of course we will. This is an unfortunate accident.
An accident? 10 million people killed on this continent alone. Cities destroyed that can never be rebuilt. The very moon, the ageless satellite of the Earth, blown to dust. Haven't you dreamed enough?
It is not a dream.
You will not wake before you die, before we die.
What can I do?
You can stop it.
Don, it can't be stopped.
It must be stopped. Man wasn't put on Earth to die by his own hand, to be murdered by his fellow men.
But what can I do?
Stop!
We can't stop. We've started a chain reaction among peoples. You know what chain reactions are. You know what follows? You know that a simple fuse lit by a tiny match can set off an explosion?
That will destroy the world.
There is nothing to be done.
Nothing?
Barshoff and Beveridge and Delaplane and I say it in all humility. We know all there is to know about these cosmic forces. We know more than any other four men in the world.
Do you four know how to stop this progress?
I know. I think they know.
But you won't stop?
How?
Well, if you four could agree to put aside all this...
We can't. There is no hope.
We must go on to destruction?
We must go on.
How do you know you must go on?
I know.
How do you know?
I have been told.
By the others?
Yes.
They'll go on if you give up?
They will. I know.
What if they died?
They are the directing brains of all the research in their countries.
And?
If they died, their programs will be set back so far. They won't die. They have died. What did you say?
I said they have died. It's impossible. They did.
How do you know they died? When?
They died on a ship in the Atlantic Ocean.
When?
When everybody else died on the Atlantic Ocean.
In the tidal wave?
Yes. You disposed of them very neatly.
I didn't...
You killed them just as you killed all those others.
They're dead.
It's my business to know about that, Dr. Anderson.
Marshall. And Beveridge. Delaplaine.
You have no rivals now, Dr. Anderson.
Why, that's right. We're in front of the world.
What's left of it?
There's nobody to carry on their work.
Are you sure?
Why, I know. But now...
Yes, now.
What were they coming here for?
I didn't say they were coming here.
They were, though. I know they were. But what... Why were they coming here?
Don't you know, Dr. Anderson?
To kill me. To murder me. Why, of course, they knew me. They heard about Project Phaeton. They knew if they murdered me, that would stop all our developments here. And they would ally themselves against us, and without the weapons that I could devise, they would... Why, they'd win the war!
What war, Dr. Anderson?
What war? Why, they'd declare war on us. No, they wouldn't declare war on us. They just... Why, they just destroy us overnight.
No.
What?
No. They weren't coming here to kill you.
I know they were.
No.
What then?
They were coming here to make a deal with you.
A deal?
Yes. They were afraid.
Of what?
Of the thing that killed them.
Tidal wave. But that...
They didn't know what it was to be, but they... Well, maybe they were afraid of it. Maybe they were afraid of what you'd do next.
Well, they'd better be afraid.
Oh, they're not anymore. They're dead.
Oh, yes, that's right. Well,
remember what your brother said?
My... Yes, I remember. But what?
Why, they awoke before they died, Dr. Anderson.
It didn't do them any good.
No, it didn't, did it?
No, it certainly didn't.
Because you didn't awake.
I...
Now you're the only one left. You know all the secrets. You know more than any other man in the whole world.
I do. Don't I?
It's in your power now to go ahead and do things that the others can't duplicate. That they can't even come near.
Why, it's my patriotic duty.
Is it?
I've got to. Why, Don, if I could tell you some of the things I've already planned. Some of the most amazing things. Why, I tell you, your mind couldn't even begin to comprehend what I can do.
And not worry about competition.
That's right.
But there may not be any place left for you to do these wonderful things, Doctor.
Why not?
Why, there might not be any world left, don't you see?
But I can't just sit here.
No, of course not.
I can't stagnate.
I agree.
Well, I've spent my whole life studying, learning, thinking and studying again. I've gone farther into nuclear fission than any other man in history. I know more than even they knew. Do you mean that I should give this all up and just sit here?
Not at all, Doctor.
Listen to me. I'll show you. There's one little thing. One simple little operation. One... Why, it's as simple as turning a switch the wrong way.
Yes?
It would neutralize every single atom of fissionable material in the world today.
Really?
I mean it. It would neutralize every stockpile in the world, and it would be 100 years before anybody could repair even one little bomb. Do you realize that?
There's only one catch in it.
What?
You. If you were still around, you and only you in all the world could, well, shall I say, unneutralize it.
That's right.
Yes.
And you want me to give it all up?
Yes.
I can't do it, Don. I've explained that to you. There's nobody left to carry on but me.
Nobody but you. That's right. Dr. Anderson...
Do you want to die?
What?
I say, do you want to die?
Die? Why, I've never particularly thought about dying, Don. Do you know that?
Not personally, you mean.
Yeah, that's right. It's curious.
But you don't mind bringing death to a great many other people, do you? Do you?
I...
To our brother Edward.
I didn't.
I'm your brother too, Sam. I'll die too, and everybody else will die, and you'll die by your hand if you don't give it up.
I'll die. Why? But I can't do it, I tell you.
You're still dreaming, Sam.
I tell you, I'm not dreaming.
It isn't too late to wake up, Sam.
I'm not dreaming.
Yes, you are, Sam, and it's time to wake up.
I tell you... The title of today's Quiet Please story is If I Should Wake Before I Die, written and directed by Willis Cooper. The man who spoke to you was Ernest Chappell. And My Brother Don was played by Don Briggs. As usual, music for Quiet Please is played by Albert Berman. Now, for a word about next week, if he can get through the door, here is our writer-producer, Willis Cooper.
Thank you for listening to Quiet Please. Next week, I have a story for you about the man who knew everything.
And so, until next week at the same time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Chappell. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
Quiet, Please, on Tuned to Yesterday from February 27th, 1949, an ABC broadcast. And that brings to a close this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. It's been a pleasure.